Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Well, James Herson, you recall that name? He's a New York Times bestselling author with his Hollywood expose, Tales of the Left Coast. And he's also a law professor and author of the Newsmax weekly column, The Left Coast Report. Well, James Herson has been describing the movies that are all the talk in Hollywood as Oscar potential for this year. And it seems that these are movies that show mostly moral bankruptcy. And I'd like to ask James Herson if he actually minds our perspective here at Bob Enyart Live. When we talk about the year-end Oscar buzz, it's not because we actually care about the Oscars, but we care about what they tell us about Hollywood and the culture war. So, James, is our attitude disrespectful? We don't really care about the Oscars, but we care about what they tell us.
I don't think there's anything disrespectful about it. There's nothing sacred about the Oscars except out here.
Yeah.
You know, it's a holy grail that people are willing to start whispering campaigns. I mean, it's kind of like a political campaign, the way they treat this thing, because they have opposition research. It's even caused the Academy to come up with new rules to try to prevent some of the strange PR and hype that's been going on, because they want to get those coveted statues. And they mean a lot of money. That's the other thing. You know,
right.
It's not just an award. A lot of these films, especially there's films that you've never heard of until right before the Oscars. All of a sudden, the critics say, well, this film is Oscar-worthy, some crazy art house film. The latest one is this thing called Sideways.
Yeah, you call that a supposed comedy. Could you tell us about that movie?
Sure. I got a hold of a copy of it, one of the Oscar screening, DVDs, and I'll tell you, it was after hearing the hype. Now you got to understand, this is a film that got the most nominations of the Golden Globes, 7, mm-hmm. including Best Picture. It also received, there's these three critics organizations, Boston, New York, and L.A. that are looked to as sort of,
the critics.
Gurus. They're
right.
Prognosticators, and when they pick the best picture, not that it's a sure shot, but it's almost a sure shot to get a nomination mm-hmm. for an Oscar. And then all this acclaim, if you look in your local paper, you look there in the Denver Post, I'll bet you there's somebody saying that Sideways is just this magnificent film. So right. I went to my, the DVD thinking I'm going to see something good. And if using cinematic scholarly terms, I think we'd have to use the word stink.
Stink.
It stinks.
It's
a waste of money for most moviegoers. And I don't understand. This is a red state, blue state thing as well. You talk about the heartland. But, we have enough flawed individuals that we deal with in life. Why do we want to have a movie dedicated to people that are flawed, doing things that are far less than ideal, and really with very little plot, and the worst music to hit films, since porn. I mean, it's this real, I'm from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I have a background in music. I used to have a trio. I love jazz. And what somebody did is they got a group of musicians together who are amateurs and told them to play pseudo-jazz for the entire film. It sounds like it was mindlessly, because you hear these vibraphone and kind of elevator jazz, and it won't stop.
And
it doesn't fit with the scene. And it's just, so I just can't get it. It's an Emperor's New Clothes film, way overhyped. Lost in Translation was not as bad as this movie, but I thought that was overhyped.
So
last year,
and you described the two male characters as an aging sociopath and a self-absorbed, moody alcoholic, wine aficionado.
Yeah,
and so that's Hollywood seems obsessed for things that are broken, morally corrupt. That's
exactly
what they love. They love it.
Well, they also seem, yeah, that's a part of it, and they sometimes like to elevate mediocrity and ignore excellence. Mm. It's very weird. And this year, you know, the excellence is screaming. It's a film like no other in history. It's The Passion of the Christ.
Well, that's actually how you and I first met via an interview. You are an acquaintance, a friend of Mel Gibson's, and you were on the set of The Passion. And so how's the Oscars, how are they expected to treat The Passion? Now, isn't it true that because it's not an English language film, it doesn't qualify for the competition of Best Picture?
Well, at the present moment, as far as the Oscars are concerned, it qualifies. The Golden Globes, these 89 members of what's called the Foreign Press Association, a lot of them are like freelancers for obscure magazines over there in Europe. These people have religiophobia. So what they did is they marginalized the film by calling it a foreign language film. Mm. But it got lumped in a basket with these films from places like Spain and France and Russia and China. Now, that to me is, you know, what I thought, and other people in Hollywood thought, well, if you take The Passion of the Christ with these very high production values and this great cinematography, and you put it with these sort of low-budget foreign films, it's going to win. Even though it's an American film, it should not be in that category. It's sure to win.
Right.
But it wasn't even nominated.
Mm.
So the Golden Globes snubbed it. And that means, you know, bias. And so the question is, the Hollywood Foreign Press has nothing to do with the voters of the Academy Awards. There's about a little less than 6,000 of them. They all live in L.A. and New York. They tend to trend left. But I can't believe that they're going to ignore the kind of accomplishment that took place cinematically in that film. If they do, I'd have the only explanation I would have is the same explanation I have with the Golden Globes. It's bias. The fact that the press keeps lumping, you know, Mel Gibson and Michael Moore together is also a sign of disconnect and bias as well.
Yeah, and you wrote an article about that. It's just out in the Washington Times, an opinion piece.
Mm-hmm.
No two people could be more different than Mel Gibson and Michael Moore, yet the media, tell us how the media is presenting them.
It's weird. It's like the print media particularly, it's almost like you can't read an article that mentions The Passion of the Christ or Mel Gibson without them mentioning Michael Moore and putting them in the same category. They'll say, you know, it was the hot film of the year, the controversial film of the year, that somehow these two guys belong together, even to the point where the Golden Globes, the aforementioned awards, were trying to get Mel Gibson and Michael Moore to co-present. I know for a fact that a major news magazine was trying to get Mel Gibson and Michael Moore to be their cover shot.
Oh, brother.
Which, to me, there's two attempts here. One is to elevate Michael Moore. Because, look, one of these guys has several decades of acting, writing, directing, an immense body of work. And the other one only has an immense body. And we know
funny.
Which is which. I mean, Fahrenheit 9/11, even if you like it, are you going to give it the best script? Mm. Are you going to give it the best, acting?
Mm.
The best directing? I mean, it's not that kind of film. It doesn't belong in the same category, nor does Michael Moore belong in that category. And the thing is, of course, Passion of the Christ was a film about universal truths, a sacred story. And it was done in a way that had never been done before by an extraordinary cast of people with accomplishments that Roger Ebert acknowledged and Richard Roper acknowledged and Peter Bart and Frank Valente and all kinds of people who know film. And so, you know, I'm confident that there are people in Hollywood that will look beyond this ridiculous campaign to demonize Mel Gibson
and
understand the content of the film.
James Herson, could you remind us of the financial success of The Passion? Because it's exciting. We like it. We like that when things that do not dishonor God, but they're actually honoring toward the gospel of Jesus Christ, that they succeed in public. We like that.
Well, this is a story for people of faith. It's right out of the Bible. It's a biblical story because Mel Gibson had this idea on his heart for 12, 13 years. And at the time that he decided to present it to powers in Hollywood, he was the most bankable star in Hollywood. One could argue that he's up there still today, but he hasn't been doing a lot of acting recently. But he was the top guy. And for the top guy in Hollywood to get turned down by everybody, not just for financing, though, he said, okay, I'll pay for it. And after it was finished, no one would distribute it, including Rupert Murdoch.
Rupert Murdoch, the guy who owns Fox and bought the Family Channel from Pat Robertson for a couple billion dollars, that Rupert Murdoch.
No, and Rupert Murdoch was, you know, kicking himself over it and was mad at his advisors to the point where Rupert Murdoch then distributed the DVD after, you know, the film was already successful. But the, you know, they had a relationship, Fox and Icon, and so, but so Mel Gibson had to finance it himself, distribute it himself. He bypassed Hollywood. He bypassed the entire infrastructure of Hollywood. He did everything himself, and that's the key biblical thing. And then,
which has had to, and I'm glad about this, but it's had to make him wildly wealthy now.
Well, it turned out that it did.
It was obviously a risk, but
you know, the irony is, and this is only because I'm friends with Mel, and knowing him as a person, he has absolutely no. You know, he's not a monetary-oriented person at all.
Yeah, and
he doesn't make decisions that way.
And, James, I'm not bringing that up as a criticism.
I'm
thrilled. I mean, I'm glad he's made the movie,
and he's
made the money.
And he's already, you know, he's given $10 million to two hospitals, and he's out there. I mean, he's going to do great things, you know, for years to come because of this. He's a man of conscience. But the thing, yeah, it is amazing. You know, you could say, I mean, the creator of the universe prospered him, is the way a person of faith looks at this. And that's exactly what it is, because, and he was verbally and in print crucified for the greater part of a year, as much as Jim Caviezel, the lead actor, was crucified and hung on a cross for 6 weeks. But, you know,
yeah, it's the most
horrible part of it was going after the guy's family. It was just so low and so disgusting, and it was really difficult.
Yeah, the way we put it is that the beautiful people, the tolerant, those who believe in free speech and diversity, their anti-Christian bigotry is rabid. They truly have a hatred for anything that honors Jesus Christ. Could I give you two examples of how Hollywood's how they despise Christianity, how it's hit our family just this past week.
Yeah, sure.
My parents gave our kids a Christmas gift, a DVD of Black Beauty. That sounds like a nice gift, right? Warner Brothers, 1994. And it says right on the cover, Family Entertainment. And, you know, this horse is owned by people who love animals, and then it gets transferred to people who are cruel. They're so evil. It's like the devil incarnate, how evil these people are toward their animals. And right in the middle of this, the people are so wicked, and in their barn where they just torture animals is this big sign that says God is truth. In other words, Warner Brothers, in their production of this movie, is showing that those who honor God as though God is true, Christ said, I am truth, those people like that, they're the evil people. They're the bad people. And, you know, there's no way in the world there would have been a sign about Muhammad and Allah.
You know, it's funny. In my book, I have a whole section where it's not even everything, but it's kind of the high point or low points of Hollywood depicting Christians, particularly pastors, but Christian people. And it's...
Yeah, they're the rapists, the child molesters.
Either that or they're these stereotypical kind of televangelist crooks or, you know, this sort of thing.
Which the Lord knows we have our fair share of those.
Of course.
But it's despicable to portray Christianity as that's the norm.
No, and you don't expect to find it in Black Beauty, and you don't expect to find it in a family-friendly film, but you do see that kind of reference so often. And it's, again, it's subtle, but it's a bias. But, you know, what it shows is it's a disconnect. And
well, it's even more than that. It's an intentional attack.
Well, it is.
Against Christians. The second example is, you know, Jerry Orbach, the actor from Law and Order, died this week.
Mm-hmm.
And the night before we heard of his death, so the day he died, we were flipping the channels to Fox News Channel. We have basic cable. And the Law and Order is airing on a channel next to Fox. And my wife, Cheryl, and I, we heard one line out of the episode. I've never watched that show. I never will watch it, I'm sure. We heard one line, and this is it. A lawyer asked a witness. He asked, after your husband raped you, he joined an anti-abortion group. Is that true? And she said, yes. And that's it. That's all we heard. We continued flicking. And then the next day, Jerry Orbach, the actor, the detective from the show, is dead. And my wife said, that's that show we passed through last night. So here they're saying, here's the guy who rapes his wife is the kind of guy who's pro-life. That's Law and Order.
Yeah.
Do you mind my being incensed at Hollywood?
I don't mind at all. Mm. As a matter of fact, as you and I talk, I put up a column on Newsmax about the latest kind of Oscar ravings that are going on out in Hollywood. And one of the things I point out is that in the critical acclaim, you see these films like Kinsey, whose main character conducts research with people who sexually abuse kids.
Right.
A film called Vera Drake that was nominated at the Golden Globes.
The abortion.
Critics.
Yeah, the
yeah,
abortion
well, this is
movie.
A housewife who, when you know, if she likes you, she gives you a free abortion.
Right.
And then we've got this film that Kevin Bacon is in called The Woodsman.
Right.
Where he plays a paroled child molester. He probably thinks he's going to get an Oscar for sure.
Just for that.
And Michael Medved wrote about this in his book, Hollywood versus America. I did it in mine as well. And it's a part of it comes from the fact that the critics in Hollywood and some of the people there, they're jaded. They look at so many films that they celebrate what they think are different and edgy. And it tends to be those plots that are unusual and that don't have a moral universe. But unfortunately, it's also those plots that have little in the way of story, because we as human beings have a traditional yearning for the stories that are in the Greek tragedies and the Shakespearean plays and contained in the Bible.
Well,
that are based on a moral universe with heroes and villains.
We want the good guys to win in the end. And, you know, we've often at Denver Bible Church, when we talk about Judgment Day, and in the Bible it says that the righteous rejoice when they see the vengeance. And people think, well, how could that be? Won't that be sad on Judgment Day when the wicked, God is punishing the wicked? And we describe it as the end, the climax of a Mel Gibson movie, where in the very end he gets the bad guys, and the bad guys are now, they got theirs. They're killed or whatever, and the audience cheers, even the liberals in the audience. They hate themselves for it, but they're cheering that the bad guy gets it in the end. In these other Hollywood movies, they try to elevate the bad guy. The bad guy is the hero, and the whole thing is broken, and they do it on purpose.
Well, sure they do, because that makes it edgy. That makes it genius. It's like Kill Bill 1. In other words, you create an amoral, nihilistic kind of universe that Nietzsche would like.
Right.
And that becomes, well, gee, isn't that a different kind of plot? Well, it is different. It's because there's not that many plots out there.
Well, how about National Treasure, which is really a neat, family-friendly movie and a fun, exciting movie? What does Hollywood think about that?
Well, you know, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, Hollywood does respect money, and they like to see, you know, so they do a certain number of family-friendly films, because it's kind of a secret that the family-friendly films
make most of them.
Lion's share of the money.
Right.
Another one that snuck under the radar in Hollywood is Pixar's movie The Incredibles, which is, in fact, not only family-friendly, but is a conservative film. It has it begins with a theme of pro-tort reform, so the trial lawyers don't like that film. And
that's
it celebrates a traditional family of superheroes, and it has a very wonderful kind of story with good and evil present. Of course, Lord of the Rings was like that. And so at the end of the day, you know, it's this thing where I think the folks in Hollywood try as they may. This is what's so great about being a conservative and being a person of faith, is that we believe in this natural order. We believe in intelligent designer. And what we see is when you try to escape from the real truths, the ones that are written on our hearts, you really can't in the end. And that those plots, those stories that people resonate to and love are a reflection of the real universe, which is, in fact, one that's moral. Mm-hmm. That we know that. That's what our faith teaches, but that's what we know in our bones. And that's one of the reasons that, as you say, the great plots, whatever they are, and we look at all the Shakespearean plots, we look at the Greek tragedies, and we look at the those stories that have thrilled people for all time, have always been based on a moral universe. And storytelling is something our Lord did. I mean, that's what parables are.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's at the end of the day, and the people that are have the most talent in Hollywood, they know this. Because that's when they always talk about, well, I can't find any good scripts. Well, the best scripts have a story.
One of the, well, that's true, but that's not as though if there were a movie with a story that elevated wickedness, that then we should approve it. Like if there's a really good story and the hero is a Nazi who killed a lot of Jews, we'd still be against that movie, no matter how great a cinematic achievement it was.
See, my view is that when you say the words great story,
right,
that it necessitates
that it's a good story.
Yeah, in other words, a good story has tension and resolution. And so if you have a celebration of, as we see quite often, of an evil, corrupt person, like natural-born killers or Pulp Fiction,
You end up
having something that's not a story at all.
Well, but because not only is Hollywood broken, but the people generally are broken so that they celebrate immorality. It's like Bill Clinton getting approval of the majority because he made people feel good about themselves. If he's a lying fornicator and we could approve of him as our president, then it makes all lying fornicators feel better. And
well,
so,
that's true. I mean, and what that brings up, again, you know, we're using theological terms, but that's the idea of living in a fallen world.
Yeah, that's right. And if you think of movies like, say, the Titanic or Ocean's Eleven, it's a thief movie, right? The guy robs a bank or whatever.
Right.
Ocean's Eleven, that's the hero is the thief. And there's a ton of movies where the hero is the guy who's trying to seduce his neighbor's wife. He's the hero.
That's true.
Or
that's
in Titanic, you know, an incredible success. I saw our local news interviewing people coming out of the theater, and they were interviewing families with kids, 11, 12-year-old kids. And I figure, wow, Titanic, what a fascinating story. It's an epic production. This must be a great movie. My wife and I go. Are shocked to see not only are there nude scenes, gratuitous sexual nude scenes, but the whole movie is a guy who's seducing a woman engaged to another man, and her fiance is the evil guy, and he's the guy with his family. They go to church and they sing Christian hymns, if you remember in that movie, and so it's the Christians who are evil, and it's the fornicating punk who's the hero. And that's, I mean, and most people go to that movie and they're just taken by the incredible accomplishment of the movie-making achievement, and the story is just exhilarating. But underlying it all, even to the point where I think we Christians, it's so subtle, is that the Christians are freaks. The Christians are losers, and it's only those who are into pornography and fornication really know the truth.
Well, it's like watching a rap video or something. You know, in other words, you're celebrating the gangster. You're celebrating that sort of thing. But even within those kinds of genres, you know, like The Godfather or some of these movies, there's a sense of justice and morality that in a good story, you'll have an evil person that has a redemptive quality and that they'll seek that quality. And they'll be better than the other you know what I'm saying, sort of an anti-hero versus a total corrupt villain. And that's a theme. Like, in some cases, you have an anti-hero who you see their justice at the end of the story, like Macbeth. So I think the ones that are the absolute, you know, they relish ugliness are the ones you're talking about where there's just zero sense of morality, and you see people who essentially are evil throughout the film, and there is no justice whatsoever. Pulp Fiction being the perfect example.
Well, in the movies we listed that you listed of possible Hollywood nominations, you've also written about Finding Neverland, which is about somebody who's thought to be a pedophile.
Now, yeah, I mean, the movie itself leaves that. That's why I use that language. It leaves it out. What I'm wondering why choose a person like that for a biopic. It's just like Kinsey. Who wants to know about these people? Well, obviously, it's only the elite, not just in Hollywood, but the elite who are on the left, both in Manhattan and Hollywood and in the academic world, who hold these people up on a pedestal, along with people like Margaret Sanger.
Kinsey, in his research, in one of his books, he had a table number 34, with children and what it takes to bring young children of different ages to climax. And obviously,
oh, unbelievable.
Yeah, he's a pedophile who's promoting pedophilia, basically. Yeah, homosexual pedophile.
Well, he encourages it. He enjoys it.
And therefore,
he's an enabler.
And therefore, Hollywood loves him. They truly love him. Like Larry Flynn. I was on Politically Correct on ABC up against Larry Flynn. And he is so perverse to prepare. I tried to read his autobiography, which was so disgusting. And he describes sexual things with young girls, children, in seductive ways. And he's so filthy and perverse. We went to a commercial and his publicist was there. It's in front of an audience of about 150 people. And he grabs her. No, not him. Bill Maher grabs Larry Flynt's publicist in a very demeaning, sexual, groping way. Unbelievably, explicitly, sexually groping her in front of the audience. And so here are liberals, the beautiful people, who act as though they believe that we should respect women and we should. And they are the perpetrators of this sexual abuse of women that's so common.
When you're talking about, it's interesting, but when you talk about pornography and obscenity, Christians and feminists are standing shoulder to shoulder all the time. I mean, that's you see them on that.
Some of the feminists.
So-called feminists. But
the national feminist groups are pro-porn, and the locals who are not as with it tend to be against pornography.
But I was a regular on that show on Politically Incorrect.
Yeah, I recall.
Unfortunately, was not on with Larry Flynt. I thankfully was not on with him. And he's a pitiful, pitiful creature.
Therefore, he's an icon of Hollywood. I have one last moment.
But actually, Hugh Hefner is the icon of Hollywood and the patron saint of Bill Maher.
Right.
But because he is, they're very sympathetic to Larry Flynt. I mean, he's not going to be the one that they're going to want to go to his house.
Right.
But they definitely want to go to Hugh Hefner's house.
Right. Good point. We're totally out of time. James Hurston, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate it. Check out his great book, Tales from the Left Coast. Hey, Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada, 431-5653. What a neat Christian school through 12th grade, 431-5653.